Hi everybody, my name's Ant McKenna from the ALNBC. Send us a message in the chat if you can't hear me or if something's not quite working tech-wise. Just want to say a big welcome to our online and in-person forum. Want to acknowledge the Muwinina people as the traditional owners of the land that we're on here in Nipaluna, Hobart. Just down the hill from Koonani. I am the EGM of the ALNBC. I grew up in Wurundjeri country in Victoria and live on Cubby Cubby country on the Sunshine Coast, and just pay my respects to elders past and present across all of these lands that we're on. And I want to introduce Howard Adams, the chair of the ALNBC. Howard, just test your mic for us.
Thanks, Anthony. Can everyone hear me? Thank you very much for joining us here in Hobart in the room, and thanks very much to everyone who's joining online. The purpose of today really is to just get out and meet people in the Tasmanian music scene. We've got a great panel of local industry folk here tonight. What I'm going to do is introduce the people in the room and then maybe talk a little bit about the industry, national industry bodies who are joining online. Everyone should have an opportunity to talk tonight. We've only got about an hour, so we're going to go through quite a lot of subjects. If you are online and you do have something that you'd like to ask, we'll put it in the chat. And if we have time at the end, we'll go back and hopefully we will get to it. So the panel with me here in the room tonight, well, we're hosted by Kay Varell of Music Tasmania. Thanks very much for hosting, Kay. Kay was going to talk tonight, but unfortunately is just recovering from a tooth operation, so he can't do that. But we're very grateful for his hospitality having us here tonight. Kimberly Galceran of Dark Lab is on the sofa over there. Kimberly's company primarily is known for booking the music at Dark Mofo, but Kimberly will be explaining a little bit later how she also books a pretty vibrant scene here in Hobart. Grace Chow will be joining us in a little while. Right opposite me is Ange Boxall, a well-known local artist and the proprietor at the Echo Festival, which I've never had the pleasure of going to, but I've been reading about it and it sounds excellent. So hopefully we'll be hearing from Ange about that a little bit later on. John Smithers, an electro experimental artist and also an organizer of events and a DJ trainer, he tells me. So we'll be coming to John a little bit later. Right here on my left is Warren Mason of the fantastic Tin Camp Studios, which I was completely unaware of the work they were doing until I prepared for this. So I'm looking forward to hearing from Warren a little bit later about what he's got going in 2026. And joining us online, but also from Tasmania, are Harry Badcock and Charlotte Gray of the Good Gum Nuts Festival. So welcome to all of you. Let me start maybe with why don't I start with Ange? Ange, the Echo Festival, as I said, looks fantastic. One of those wonderful little sort of organic, locally generated festivals that sort of coming along, I guess, to fill the gap that's been left by some of the bigger festivals falling over. Could you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and what you're most looking forward to in 2026?
Yes, I'm an artist and have been for 25 years. I've spent a lot of time overseas in the UK and America, where I was based for almost 12 years. I went to a lot of festivals and played a lot of shows over there in those countries. And whenever you come back to home or wherever you go, you always take little snippets of ideas with you. And I moved from these big cities like London and Nashville to Swansea, East Coast Tasmania, which is a tiny little coastal town about halfway up the East Coast of Tasmania. It wasn't long before I realised that there was a huge gap in the market for anything creative, really. Live music, certainly, and anything cultural, First Nations space. So I thought, well, you can complain about something or you can change it. So I started Echo Festival in 2018 as a very small pilot event. I guess I'm one of those people who comes from the angle of both artist and event organizer. So I like to make sure that I treat artists with respect, and we do the right thing. We support a lot of Tasmanian acts, make sure that I spread the love to within Tasmania primarily, but we also have people from other parts of the world as well.
And just in terms of funding and keeping those things going, I mean, you started in 20, so right before COVID. Have you found that the funding that's been available from the various state bodies and federal bodies has been useful? Have you been able to access it? I mean, is there anything that could be done better?
Oh, it's getting worse. I'll start with that. I have been funded by Events Tasmania from the beginning as seed funding to start with. And then obviously, yes, we had COVID, which was very difficult. However, off the back of COVID, there was a lot of funding going around, COVID relief funding. So that was, whilst good, also kind of distorted the industry. Everything across every industry has gone up significantly in that time. The funding has now completely dropped off, and but those prices are still sitting high. So it's actually, to be honest, it's getting harder, which is why so many festivals have crumbled. And I think, unfortunately, in Tasmania, we're going to see that possibly declining even more, which I don't like to say that. So I think there does need to be some action in that space.
Thanks. Warren, if I could just come to you. Tin Camp Studios, an amazing idea. Tell us a little bit about what you've got on and what 2026 holds.
Well, 2026 for me is probably a little bit of a breakout year just for my own music. I'm going to release an album this year. That album come out of what Tin Camp actually is. So at this point in time, Tin Camp is, we created it to be a safe space for people to share. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. We say that all stories are relevant. Everyone's truth needs to be heard and stories need to be told. But for Tin Camp this year, it's a little bit weird mix. I know that Tin Camp was created here in Tasmania, with the great help from the Tasmanian government through funding and national bodies through funding. But it's sort of Tin Camp has sort of come to a stage where it's difficult to find situations for Tin Camp to actually happen in Tasmania. So I've had the great pleasure to travel back out to where I'm from in far western New South Wales, and I have a Tin Camp out there that's set up as a recording studio. It runs a monthly open mic series and passing through acts that are on a traveling, like a road show sort of thing. And it works out of the great willingness of a lady out there called Rebel Black. She has a property out there that she's the custodian of the Tin Camp. And this week we've announced that through great funding again, Tin Camp is offering three paid residencies from now till the end of the year. And there's expressions of interest that are out at this point in time. So that's what's taken my for Tin Camp at this part of the year. So that's where I'm at this point in time.
And yeah, so obviously you've got a lot of experience in working in very sort of traditional kind of tin sheds as the sort of tin camp is set up to be. But you were telling me before when we came up that your new record was recorded not in the tin camp, but actually somewhere else, which is even kind of more interesting.
It was an apple shed down on the Huon River. Jethro Pickett, a beautiful musician and music creator and a recording extraordinaire, I believe. Yeah, and it was the same thing again. It was a space of safety for people to go in there and just let creative juices flow, I think. And if you can get into those spaces where you feel like you're very welcome to be there, there's no external stuff going on about don't touch that, don't touch this, you're not allowed over this, behind that, which is what happens in a lot of crazy big music studios. So we're in that I've been lucky enough to meet those people like Jethro and Ben Salter and Chris Coleman that are like I call very dear friends, and creating with those boys is like a well, I'm very blessed and honored to be able to do that, because I don't come into the music industry as a musician. I'll come in as a storyteller first and foremost, and it's like the music part of it just come along with meeting these people and being in those spaces.
Do you think he's right to say that it's the only music studio in Australia that has a river flowing underneath
Probably is. Yeah, you can
it?
hear it in my album. There's you can hear the lapping of
Fantastic.
the yeah, it's
Good
pretty
stuff.
cool.
Kimberly, if I can come to you, maybe just talk a little bit about your background as a booker in the city of Hobart, what you do for Dart Mofo, and what's coming up in 2026 that you're excited about.
Sure. Yeah. I've been here in Hobart booking Dark Mofo for the last 5 years, which is my big passion. Because I'm really interested in experimental and kind of new music. So I love that part of my job, and I also oversee the business objectives and programming for the Odeon Theatre, Alta, which we're in right now, and in the Hanging Garden, along with Sam from my team, who's right here. So yeah, we've really been trying to grow these venues and develop them and make sure that there's an audience in Tasmania, and trying to get more international and interstate touring artists down to Hobart that might usually miss Hobart on their routing. I think we've done well in the last couple of years to grow that, but we're always trying to get better. So that's kind of one of the challenges and opportunities that we're working on at the moment. As far as my history, I started as a bass player. I've been a DJ and a radio host many years. I was a venue booker many years ago in Sydney as well, and I also used to promote my own events in warehouses. And a tour promoter as well for big international artists as well.
One of the things we were talking about earlier was the fact that there is almost a queue of highly talented Australian artists, some of whom I know in Melbourne and in Sydney, and you're telling me that there are many more who would like to break out. Just tell us a little bit about what can be done about that to sort of socialise the talent that is here around the country.
Yeah, look, talent in Hobart is massive, and unfortunately, because of isolation, it's obviously really difficult to get off the island and play shows in Sydney or Melbourne. They can't just jump in a car and go and play some gigs. I think there's a lot of people that care about this topic and are looking at ways that it can be improved. One is getting them to Big Sound, which I know Kay is looking at through Music Tasmania. Really keen to do that, and also connecting them with interstate bands so that those bands might play here, and then in return those bands the Tassie bands might go and play interstate as well. But we try to make connections as much as possible, and I'm glad that there are people that are passionate, I think, in the industry that are taking a closer look at regional music and the talent that might be kind of a little bit hidden sometimes.
Sorry, I was just having a little bit of a sound issue then, as you probably noticed. But thank you. Grace, you're here. You've arrived. Thank you very much.
Work.
That's
It's a
great.
nice reverb happening.
Okay.
It's coming from this, I think. It's muted there. Yes. It's muted as well. It's just through the. Hi. No, that's all good.
Okay, Grace. We just sound a little bit spooky, maybe,
Yeah.
but Grace, you are, as I understand it, operate in the hip hop space.
Yep.
You're an artist. You put on events. What's happening in 2026 for you?
Well, I work a lot with Alta, and I've been putting on monthly hip hop nights here called Oracle Nights, which focus on showcasing emerging underground hip hop artists in the space and giving some people their first opportunities on stage. It's also the only regular all ages gigs where minors can come with a responsible guardian, so we're creating intergenerational connections through hip hop, which is really cool. I moved from Launceston in 2020, and I was performing hip hop there, and for the first 2 years of making music I was the only woman in Tasmania rapping, and so I've had a big focus on creating safe spaces in Hip Hop for Women. And last year we ran the Tasmania's first all-female hip hop gig with the support of Arts Tasmania and Alta Bar. And that was a really tremendous, exciting to see how the culture had shifted. So for me, I'm also a performing artist. I make hip hop, but I make a lot of different genres of music kind of circling around social and political messaging. And yeah, I guess I'm always keen to be running events that give back to community and create opportunities for people here, because there are so many talented, amazing artists here in Tasmania that don't really have opportunities in hip hop spaces. But I've really seen an awesome shift in that in the last few years, and we're trying to create spaces for young people as well.
I think that's extremely important. I mean, one of the things that keeps young people away from live venues is that there are not that many all ages events. I think it's extremely important that people can get access to live music whilst they're still forming their tastes and deciding what they're going to do. Because really, once that's hardwired in, it's very difficult to persuade kids to sort of go and do something else. So, when did you go to your first show?
I went to my first gigs in Launceston when I was underage, and I was kind of like sneaking in to venues, which I can't really do now. It's a
That's
lot.
what I wanted to hear. Excellent.
But I think like one of the things about having all ages events or events that minors can come to is they need to be accessible. Like they need to be financially accessible, because we have festivals and things like that, but there are a lot of young people that can't afford to go to that. So it's awesome to have to be able to keep these events free because of Alta support. And
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. John, if I can come to you, please. So, John, you have an extremely interesting background, having kicked off in experimental jazz in Brisbane and Melbourne, ended up here in Hobart. Explain a little bit about the scene that you're in.
Yeah, so I guess it's a pleasure to be here, be able to talk. And maybe I'm a part of a scene that doesn't get a lot of recognition in the real world, because a lot of the spaces that I'm interested in are like internet communities, and music that comes out of those spaces, friendships, worlds, ideas, aesthetics, purely in the internet world. And it's been a real pleasure for me to be able to kind of extrapolate and find a lot of interesting characters from locally who are operating in that space and have been producing for a long time. So I've been working predominantly through my project Heart Pink, which is an exclusive hyperpop event series, and have been promoting a lot of local artists, spending hours and hours and hours searching for whoever these people are. A lot of them try and stay anonymous, but you kind of eventually can work out who they are because it's a small enough place, which is a kind of an interesting, fun game. And it started out this project that I did a couple of years ago where I listened to every single SoundCloud account that was tagged with Tasmania. It was like 6,000 accounts or something. And I went through and listened to every single one to find interesting artists. And I found a whole array of artists through that process. And it inspired me to go, hey, let's actually have an event series where we can showcase those artists and then cultivate that by actually introducing international artists. So I work a lot with Southeast Asian artists, bringing them here to Tasmania to put on shows, and they also exist in those spaces. And then we've also worked a lot with Tanzanian artists as well over the years too. So it's been a crazy mixed bag of genres, but it's more focused on experimental dance and how that can, yeah, push into new directions and new boundaries of thinking through sound.
And are there venues here in Hobart and other parts of Tasmania that want to showcase that music?
I think not that they don't want to showcase. I think there just previously wasn't an education of what that music is, which fair enough. Some of these artists only have five listeners. So how do you expect somewhere like Tasmania and also the pressures of existing in the world now means that it's very difficult to actually spend the time to looking for these kinds of artists. So it's more been about not so much that the venues haven't been searching for that. It's like it was it's felt like my responsibility to be able to open that access and then support the venues and support the artists and then also develop the audience base to make it viable for everyone involved to be able to see and witness this very obscure, but also beautifully elegant and divisive music all in the space of Hobart.
So do you have any hopes or ambitions that a Hobart artist will tour up into Southeast Asia?
Yeah, we're already seeing that happening through this project.
Right.
So last year I ran a festival, a five-day festival, that involved artists from Taiwan and Vietnam. They're already doing shows with artists that were part of the festival. They're already collaborating on new shows. We're also seeing that's been spread into places like Tanzania as well. So there's an interest and a following of wanting Tasmanian artists to go there. And because of the style of music and the intensity that I've been extrapolating out of the scene here, people from those locations think that music in Tasmania is very psycho.
Have you looked into India? I went to a couple of conferences last year, one in LA and one in Mumbai. And it seemed to me almost as if, you know, the big labels had almost just found where India was on the map. Everyone was talking about it. I've spent quite a lot of time over the years in India, and I love the place. It was fascinating to find out that there are quite a lot of small room, smallish room bands now touring in India. Would that be somewhere that you'd look at?
Yeah, potentially, like anywhere is possible. And, you know, that's the beautiful thing about obviously having internet culture and also the way in which people can now navigate that space. Obviously, it's getting harder and harder all the time, but people who've been living on the internet and have been searching through, scrolling, finding all those weirdos on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, etc., you know, Soulseek, they all know how to search and how to find people from all different countries. And that's an exciting output. And then being able to get them to come to Tasmania and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think that drives a lot of the ethos of what I've been doing for the last few
years.
That's
how the internet was supposed to work. That sounds fantastic. That's great. Hey, we're just going to move to some of our online guests now. And if I can go first to Harry and Charlotte, just to remind people, they run the Good Gumnuts Festival. Hi, guys. Thank you for joining.
Hello.
I was going to ask you the same question. What's going on for you in 2026? And is it getting harder or better to run the festival?
Bit of column A, bit of column B. first of all, I've got a bit of imposter syndrome being on this panel. The panel's amazing, so thank you for having us.
Yeah.
but Good Gumnuts Festival, that was born out of, funnily enough, a wedding anniversary. We had the chance to book Kim Churchill for a gig, so we opened up to extended friends and family. And that was held in a little town called Heybridge, which is about 300 people. And then, yeah, the wider community got wind of it and asked us to hold it again. And we thought the name Anniversary Festival was really lame. So we come up with the name Good Gumnuts, which probably
isn't where that come from.
Yeah, probably isn't much cooler. But that was Good Gumnuts and how Good Gumnuts was born. And for us, it's just a really inclusive festival. We sort of built it with the in mind that we're in our 30s, we've got a young family, we want something safe to bring kids along to. And it's really cool the last 3 years that it's been running. You just see kids running around experiencing music for their first time, and every year it makes me emotional at an unsuspected moment that you see a little kid in the mosh pit experiencing something for the first time, and it's crazy.
I think, like, for us it's a bit of FOMO too, like, oh, we've got kids now, like, we can't really do anything. But it's, I think it was really important for us to put something on that we were happy to have our child around. So I think that was really important for us. But I think following on from what I think Grace said, that, like, everyone knows it's such a huge cost, and there is that, we try to be as community like centric as we can, but there is that barrier to entry because we've struggled to get funding. This is our first year out of 4 years we've got Events TAS money, like grant, I should say. So, like, we've had to have, you know, our tickets aren't cheap. Like, we know that. So I think, yeah, that's part of, yeah.
So it doesn't sound as if there are any complaints from the Good Gumnuts Festival. Things are going pretty well.
Things go well. Last year was a bit of a rough year for us, just with lower than expected ticket sales, but we've come back bigger and stronger. And yeah, it is tough out there. Like, insurance costs are hectic, and as every promoter probably in this room can sympathize with, is Tasmanians love buying tickets at the last minute. So that pre-event stress right up until the week or 2 weeks before, like, holy moly, are we going to pull this off? And then somehow it just comes together.
And I think this year was kind of tough for us too. Like last year just didn't go how we projected. So we didn't have the funds there to pay a team to help us. And we've essentially almost like doubled in size. So we've just kind of had to take that all on ourselves because we just didn't have the spare cash we thought we were going to have a team of 8 or 10 that we really needed in the planning phase.
Thanks, guys. I said before that we've got a few members of national bodies online as well, many of which you'll be familiar with, like the Artist Managers Association. I think we've also got Clive Miller from Support Act with us. Are you there, Clive?
Yep. Hi, Howard. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Clive, everyone's aware of the great work that Support Act does. Do you want to just lay out for us what's on your agenda for 2026? What are your priorities?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, and for those of you that don't know, I mean, we're a charity and we provide crisis relief and mental health support to people who work in music across all genres. So all the genres we've heard of tonight and more. I guess when we're thinking about this year, we're just really renewing our focus on reminding people across the board that all of our services are here and available at no cost. And we're particularly keen, in fact, to reach out to people across the country, people in Tasmania. We've been really happy that in the last 6 months or so, we've got to do some stuff with Kay and with other people in Tasmania. And we've got some more things in the works, I think, over the coming months. I guess my message really, in some ways, is that we really encourage anyone that's working at a music venue or in a festival, in a management company, a booking company, live production company, whether it's the owners of the business or the staff, to really take the opportunity, if you're struggling and want somebody to talk to contact the Support Act Wellbeing Helpline. There's counsellors there that can talk to you about any aspect of your mental health and well-being, and also what we've referred to as mental health related issues. So things, whether there's relationship issues or financial issues, grief counselling, all of that sort of stuff. And we always say you don't have to be in crisis to call the helpline. Sometimes you just need to talk it out. So that is there. And then Support Act, of course, provides a range of education and training programs as well. And I think the second message, Howard, that we're really wanting to kind of get out there is that when you look at all of the programs and services that we offer, they really are the equivalent of an EAP, an Employment Assistance Program. Now, for many of the large organizations, they would have an EAP that they make available to their staff. But for small and medium-sized organizations and sole traders, they generally would not have access to those services. So I guess we're just trying to get people to reframe perhaps how they see the work that we do and the benefit that they can get from reaching out to us. And we encourage them to do that because it's all free.
That sounds great, Clive. Thanks very much. Maggie Collins from the Australian Artist Managers Association. Are you with us, Maggie?
I am. Hello,
Oh,
Howard. How are you?
fantastic. Very good. Thanks for joining, Maggie. One of the things I thought I might ask you, seeing as we were in Tasmania, is how would you say it differs being in a more regional part of the country to being in one of the bigger cities when you're acting as a manager?
Well, that's a very topical question for me because I actually just moved from Brisbane to Lismore. of all places, specifically Lismore Heights, I would emphasize. And I want to give a special shout out to all of the amazing people from Lismore who've gone through a lot over the past couple of years. But I mean, I've always said that for artist managers, all we, I mean, there's a lot of overheads that can exist when you operate in so many other different businesses and sectors within the music industry. Artist management, though, is a service business. And if you're working with an artist, I've always kind of like facetiously joked that all you need is a laptop and a connection to internet and hopefully an airport close by. If that's the case for people working in regional areas, then it's actually kind of one of the more accessible things about artist management as an industry. But there's a lot of other challenges that go with the role of artist management. And that's what the Association of Artist Managers, which is my organization, we exist to advocate for those managers and by proxy Australian artists, because across the board, a traditional artist management arrangement is that we only make money when the artists make money. So there's shared risk there, and we need our careers as to be sustainable. And that means we need the artists' careers to be sustainable, and we need that whole ecosystem to work. There's a lot of challenges facing that ecosystem at the moment, obviously. But one of the aspects about artist management is that you really are on the front line, first and foremost, and you have a touch on every single sector, part of the sector, because an artist manager's role, it's like a piece of string. And everyone's relationship is different with their artist and what they do. But essentially, it's a jack of all trades, mainly kind of situation. So we're just looking ahead at this year, trying to face those challenges in an advocacy sense, and trying to get policymakers and decision makers and governments to really see those challenges and try to protect Australian culture across the board.
So Maggie, one of the most important things that you need as an artist management is a manager is a network. How would you recommend that artist managers who are in the bush or out in regional areas would maintain that network? Is there a simple answer, which is just join the Artist Managers Association?
Well, I would definitely recommend it, because we have so many professional development opportunities and also funding opportunities, specifically MAKE, which I know ALNBC also have worked with, to get managers to international conferences. Amazingly, it's in international environments that are the strongest places for local managers to bond. And bonding is one of the most important parts of artist management and working in this industry, because we're as Kendrick Lamar says, I'm not in the music business, I'm in the people business. And that's essentially what is the most important part, is keeping those connections strong. So yeah, if you're in the bush and you're managing and you've just started, sometimes a lot of people fall into the role. A lot of people are already doing it and they don't even realize that they're an artist manager. So it's really about making that first step to at least virtually connect to other managers, because goodness knows it's a very lonely job. And yeah, there's probably not another artist manager next door to you. So yeah, try and connect virtually, and then we do what we can to connect everyone eventually in real life.
Thanks, Maggie. I think we've also got Stephen Ray on the line. I met Stephen when we were down in Canberra for the ACT Music Awards. Stephen works at the Office of the Arts. Stephen, are you around? Are you there? Can you hear me? No, maybe not. Well, maybe we'll come back to Stephen. Hayley Ayres is a board member of ALNBC based in Perth. She runs 360 Artist Logistics. Amongst other things, she is partly responsible for delivering the Laneway Festival over there in Perth, but she also runs an amazing event that takes place in July, August every year called Sound States. I'm not sure how many people know about Sound States, but it's a marvelous thing. Hayley, could you tell us what's going on at Sound States in 2026? Oh, dear, gosh. It's a bit like the BAFTAs. Okay. Berish. Okay. Berish Belanda runs Green Music Australia. Berish, are you there?
I'm here. Third time
Fantastic.
lucky.
Thank you. Thank heavens for that. Berish, I wanted to ask you a little bit about venues. We have a lot of small venues in our cohort, and we know that they are feeling the pinch. People are drinking less, business rates are up, insurance is up. But one of the things that I know that your organization has been involved in is making venues more sustainable, which I think also has the effect of driving down certain costs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really great you mentioned, well, not great, that perfect storm that hitting venues, like, sadly, a lot of it does some way, in some way, circle back to climate change. You know, like last minute purchasing, if you're getting extreme weather events knocking out gigs, it certainly increases that behavioral driver, as does it push insurance premiums up when you've got flood damage. You know, Maggie was talking about Lismore. We've just hit the hottest day on record in Victoria, and it was 2025 was the third hottest year globally. So, yeah, all these things are becoming very much real for people. And so is electricity prices going up. I know it's probably not one of the biggest bills for venues, but the one of the great things about sustainability in the context of energy is that if you drive down your energy consumption, which is a positive thing as far as climate action goes, it also reduces your bills. And we did a fairly good study into it, thanks to some funding from Sound New South Wales and Music Australia, and showed that average venue savings are around $10,000 a year. So that's like year-on-year savings. Sometimes it requires a bit of upfront investment, but for the most part, that's offset really quickly. And also, there's a heap of government initiatives that can support that upfront investment. You know, there's a battery program happening as we speak. There's been numerous programs to support solar panels being popped on roofs. There's less sexy stuff like improving the envelope of the building, you know. So we run a newsletter, and if people sign up to Synthesize, then we can give you that information, let you know when the grants are coming. And importantly, we've got this certification program that's in its infancy, but we've proven it to work, and it's this essentially a way for venues to promote the good work they're doing, raise their own internal aspirations, make those savings. And over time, we were developing a registry. So it'll be hopefully a resource that managers and artists can use around the country when they want to book those greener tours.
And Berish, just while we've got you, is there anything that you can tell us about festivals and what you're doing to improve the situation there?
Yeah, we run something called the Party with the Planet Alliance. We've been doing that for some time pre-COVID, and we initially got people together to talk about waste, and particularly we were running a campaign called Beware a Bottle to try and end single-use plastic water bottles. But it sort of segued into a broader conversation, and so it's a really a strong peer-to-peer learning network. Pretty much most of the big and many smaller festivals are represented in this alliance, and we run pretty regular sessions. They're going to start back up in March, late March, I reckon, where people can learn about ways to fund their sustainability initiatives, ways to move to reusables, like ways to move away from diesel generators. We cover all the kind of topical things for folks. So again, if they just reach out, we can put them on that list. It's free to join, free to take part.
Thanks, Berish. Patrick McCarthy is responsible for the Creative Workplaces Survey. And I know about this because I work in a shared workspace called the Commons myself and am receiving emails to complete the survey. And now I've met you, Patrick, I certainly will do that when I get back to work. Do you want to just tell people about what is behind the survey, how simple it is to complete, and why you're doing it?
Yeah, thanks, Howard. And hi, everyone. My name's Patrick from the Creative Workplaces team, as mentioned, and really great to be joining you tonight and hear about all the awesome work happening in the sector, and particularly down in Tassie. I was actually down in Hobart last Thursday for a disability arts gathering, which was really great. So sorry I can't be in the room with you tonight, but really appreciate the opportunity to join online.
Patrick, sorry, can I just stop you there just before we go too far into this? Because I think we're having a little bit It's been difficult to hear most people, including me, but I think we're just having a little bit of difficulty hearing you. Is there anything you can do on your end with your microphone, maybe, that just might make it a little clearer?
I
Maybe
move a
if
bit
you could.
closer. Is that better?
Okay, just give me a second, please, Patrick. Okay, Patrick, do you want to give it another go, please? Sorry about that.
That's all right. Is that any better?
Patrick, we'll just try one more time.
It's all right. Sounds like people can hear me on Zoom, but maybe not in the room. Look, going by the comments.
That's worse. Oh well. Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, it might just be the people in the room that I'll have to brief afterwards. Patrick, apparently everyone online can hear you perfectly. So maybe if you say your piece, at least you'll get your message out to those people, and we'll brief people afterwards because I've got the email here on my computer.
That would be great. Thanks, Ed. I'll keep it pretty quick then if that's the case. But yeah, our remit at Creative Workplaces, we're part of Creative Australia. We're really close with Music Australia, I'm sure most of you know. Our remit is to promote fair, safe, and respectful workplaces. So if you haven't had the opportunity to check out the Creative Workplaces website yet, would encourage you to do that. It's a centralized hub of information on things like paying conditions, safety, issues like bullying, discrimination, harassment. And we're really here to support artists and arts workers and businesses across all art forms around the country. We're running a survey at the moment, the Creative Workplaces Survey, which is a really a landmark piece of work to create the first national picture of what it's like to work in the creative industries. We know it's really hard working in the arts. So there's questions in the survey about things like paying conditions, bullying, discrimination, harassment, safety, and so forth. It's pretty easy to take part. I'm going to pop the link in the chat if that can be shared to people in the room as well. The survey is open till February 23rd. We really want to hear from the music sector, and we in particular really want to hear from people in Tassie. It's great that there's a good contingency there tonight. So it's open to all artists and arts workers and people that run businesses, sole traders. We really want to hear from everyone. So please do the survey, share it with your colleagues, your staff, your collaborators, your friends, your communities, and really encourage them to take part because the data from this survey will inform national policy and initiatives going forward. We're working really closely with the team at Arts Tas as part of this, and they have a strong interest. So, yeah, really encourage you to share it as far and wide as you can, and please do take part yourself. But thanks for the opportunity to speak tonight and for having me. It's much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Now, if I
Howard, I'm just going to jump in for one second.
yeah.
So Stephen Ray from the Office of the Arts, because of the, he's in the office, and
Yeah.
because of their firewall, he just can't, he's on the call, so he can hear us, but he can't actually say anything. But he wanted me to let everyone know that Revive Live and Festivals Australia are going to be opening again in the next financial year, and Revive Live will open early next financial year. So there's a stack of regional and remote festivals and venues that were funded through Revive Live previously. So thanks, Stephen, for jumping on, and sorry you can't get through the government firewall.
Okay, thanks, Stephen. We'll see you in May when we're down in Canberra. Hopefully, we've got Letitia Ackland somewhere on the line from Balia Productions. Letitia, are you there? No? Okay, all right. Well, in that case, I might just move on to something as we were talking about government funding. As you probably all know, there was a federal government inquiry into the live music industry that reported last March. And thus far, we haven't really seen any solid changes. Not that I'm causing a stink about that, but I just thought that we might ask the question of the people in the room, particularly Ange, who said that things are getting more and more difficult. What would meaningful national support for Tasmania-based music actually look like from your perspective?
Well, I mean, I guess, coming from both as an artist and as a a festival organizer. For me personally, I'm going to answer from a personal space and from that, what I do. I've created a festival that's boutique, and therefore numbers are small and have to remain small if I'm wanting to create those connections that we really set the whole festival up for. And I guess, Tasmania has this philosophy, apparently, around quality over quantity. Sometimes, of course, quantity is fantastic, and I love going to festivals where there's huge crowds. It's a great buzz. But at large, I think a lot of Tasmanian things across, again, various sectors are quality over quantity. And I think that that really does need to be nurtured. The world has changed, particularly since COVID. And I think that people are wanting those experiences, a more, a closer connection to something meaningful. And so, from my perspective, and same with as an artist, I don't have any interest in performing at big, I mean, my audience isn't of that nature anyway, but I love those intimate sort of spaces, and I want to have those opportunities both as an artist and for other people as well, for other musicians and artists across the board.
Yeah, I mean, would you agree that things don't really always automatically have to get bigger? I mean, you're here in Tasmania, you're running a boutique festival. You'd be happy just as long as people continue to come. They don't necessarily have to come every year. They may come once every 4 years because that's all they can afford to do.
Yes.
That's an interesting message. Okay. Now, John, you're a quality over quantity guy, I'm sure. I can ask you the same question. If you could have exactly what you wanted from government funding to support live music in Tasmania, what would it be?
I think what's important for me is maybe a recognition of varying forms and genres of music that are very underrepresented, particularly in the late night electronic music space. Sure, that gets a lot of ground and a lot of coverage in some aspects from commercial dance music festivals, but there's a lot of really beautiful and amazing work that's been done and risks that are taken in those spaces that often get overlooked because, again, same problem. There's like five people going to the shows that are not recurring, or that it's not sustainable for those reasons. So I think those for funding bodies is to actually like, okay, let's have a look at ways in which we can support things that only have limited numbers of people, are only in these weirdo spaces. And yeah, sure, it's not going to hit maximum amount, but it might also open up doors for new possibilities for things to occur.
Thanks. What about you, Warren? You're an artist and you're running a really interesting project with the Tin Camp Studios. I mean, if government funding was perfect for that, what would you do with it? What would it look like?
Well, I suppose funding for me is it's a double-edged sword. I feel like if you become too reliant on government funding, government sort of dictates who and when they can fund people. And on the other hand, like it's more about a wage to let you be an artist. Because realistically, not everyone can just be an artist. A lot of people have to be an artist, and on the side, they have to work a full-time job to pay for their artistry. So it's a double-edged sword for me. I'd like the idea of being self-governed by myself and the business that I run. I think that's the dream job for me. So I'm not constantly having to access funding off anyone. Like if I can make myself have more than one or two artists projects going on at the same time and just creating little bits of money here and there. It makes me feel more aligned to who I am really as a as an artist, because I do feel that a lot of artists sit and wait to be able to fit into something that the government says, oh, we can fund that because that does this. So it's tricky, but it's a double-edged sword all along.
So it's not a panacea, because artists still need to be artists and
That's
still need a level of independence to choose what
yeah,
they do. Yeah, that's
that's
interesting.
exactly right. Like you've got to be able to create and create what you want to create, not what the government is going to fund at that point in time.
Although I suppose money does give you the license to do what you want to do. I mean,
Definitely, that's the.
look at Dartmofa. I mean, that's philanthropy, I suppose, really. I mean, that is an amazing thing that was started by someone with a massive funds behind them. What's the sort of difference between working in that space where you're really pushing the boundaries and you're bringing in amazing things, and you're really not so worried about, first and foremost, can we make ends meet? You're really talking about really making this festival world class, and say working in venues around Hobart that you have for many, many years now, where clearly you need to be in the black.
Yeah, look at Darkmofo is incredibly privileged to be funded by Mona and the local government as well. So we're very lucky there. As regarding like other venues, I've seen some of the grant money be put to really good use, upgrading systems and things like that, which is fantastic. I personally feel that a lot of funding, unfortunately, goes to organizations and groups and people and wages, and very little of it trickles down to the artist where it's probably most needed. But I haven't actually myself applied for grants or anything. As Warren said, I've always felt that it's like putting a square peg into a round hole, unless it's really going to fit the bill of what they want. It's a lot of work and not necessarily the payoff unless you've really got the same objectives as they want you to meet. So I hope that answers your question.
That was a great answer. Thank you very much, Kimberly. And maybe I could just come lastly to Grace. You're putting on events that aim to bring in community, aim to bring in younger people, and really sort of shape the way the arts is consumed and appreciated. Government funding, could it be better? What would you like to see?
Hip hop is historically hard to put on at venues. There's a lot of venues that won't put it on, and it's difficult in Hobart, but it's nearly impossible to put on in Launceston, Devonport, Burnie, unless you have a really big following and you're a big touring artist. Mainly interstate acts have been the last few acts who have put on hip hop in Launceston and in Devonport. But there are so many people in these areas that listen to hip hop and don't get to see themselves in the artists that they watch. A lot of artists, a lot of people who love hip hop are going to Melbourne to see the artists that they love. One of the Oracle nights we did here, we had a single mum drive from Launceston to here, which if you don't live in Tasmania, it's nearly 3 hours to have her two 16-year-old daughters perform two songs. So, like, there are so many artists I know in Launceston as coming from there that would give so much to not only perform but just to be in a space where they can listen to the music that they love live, and create that community and celebrate the culture of hip hop, which obviously has lots of different elements involved. So yeah, I think there's work to do here, but there's so much more work to do in areas like Launceston and further out, which funding could really help with.
So what you're saying is really what you need is, I mean, as Brian Eno said, all big artists came out of a seed, and you need to use whatever funding you can to create an infrastructure that will nurture a scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because the scene's there, they just don't have a place to connect and come together and perform. Yeah.
Cool. We're sort of coming up to the end. Is there anyone online who's sent in a question or has a burning platform that's best? Bess, do you want to say something? This is Andrew Bassenthwaite, who's a board member of the ALNBC. He's an accountant who specializes in insurance in the entertainment industry. Bess, welcome.
Hi, Howard. Hi, all. How are we going?
You're going to have to speak a bit louder, I think, Bess. Just...
All right, hold on. Let me just see if I.
Is that better?
Yes, that is.
Alrighty,
Yeah.
hi all. A lot has been happening in the insurance industry over the last 12 months. There's been a parliamentary inquiry into the live music industry. The Insurance Council of Australia, which we've been working with, has done a lot of work in regards to tort reform and civil liabilities. And what we're trying to do is, I suppose, make it less riskier for insurance companies to come back into the marketplace. So if we're talking about the music venues around Australia, we've got about three underwriters that are actively involved in Australia and offering insurance to small to medium-sized venues. So what we're trying to do is make the prospect for insurers better and bring more in. More insurers means there's more competition and rates are coming down. One thing that has happened over the last year, which is what we call a softening market, is that insurance rates are coming down. So for property insurance, et cetera, there is going to be some relief. But unfortunately, on the liability side, it's still quite expensive. And I think that's where most of the hit has been felt by venues and festivals around Australia. But there are things in place. The things are happening on that front. We do understand that there is one underwriter coming back into Australia that hopefully we can make an announcement about from the ALNBC in about 7 days' time. And they're a specialist small to medium-sized venue insurer based out of London that are coming back into Australia. So we believe that's going to offer some real savings back into the industry. There are a few initiatives that we're doing as the ALNBC. One of the big ones is one for venues, et cetera, and festivals to help themselves. One big thing that you have to do in insurance is represent yourself the best possible way you can to insurers. So we've got two apps that are coming out. I've been saying this for a while, and I'm sorry, but we're in a testing phase. We are testing in a venue at the moment. This app is about infrastructure and management. So rather than just leaving your risk management to a year end when you're getting your insurance and you're trying to get insurance and bring your premiums down, do it actively on a day-to-day basis, which demonstrates to the insurance industry that we are a mature industry and we care about risk. So there's some more things coming out of that shortly.
Howard, Peter McPherson from the Polish Club wants to say a quick hello as well. Are you there, Peter?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Can you hear that? Yep. Oh, great. No, I just wanted to say, I just wanted to second what Grace said about, the scenes there. So we just need a place in Hobart. I mean, Alta's fantastic and a safe place, but perhaps we need something else, a little bit smaller. And if there was some funding from that, from the Hobart Council or somewhere else, that'd be really great to have a really safe place to get, emerging acts and really new bands playing in Hobart. And that's what we're trying to do with the Polish Club, but just putting it out there.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much indeed. Well, look, there aren't any more questions. We are on time. Thank you very much indeed to all my panel members who gave their time and their insights tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks very much to everyone in the room for coming along and for doing a sterling job on the sound.
Thanks, Howard. And Letitia has just joined us.
Oh,
Letitia
okay.
Eklund from Bell Productions. I don't know if she's ready to say a quick hello.
Letitia, are you there?
Sorry, was that just a quick introduction to myself? Just caught the end of
So,
that.
Letitia is from the far southwest of South Australia, where she runs Balia Productions. Letitia, do you want to just say a quick hi and just tell people in the room and online What is going on, what you're doing, what you're looking forward to in 2026.
Yeah, so I'm a proud Gugutha Wurundjeri woman from Sujuna in South Australia, the far west coast of South Australia. So it's 8 hours from Adelaide. I live and work and play on Kaurna country. So Bali Productions, I'm the director of it. And pretty much the reason I started my business was to get more mob in the industry, essentially kicking down the doorways for others to walk through, but also giving them a journey to go along the same pathways that I have. So currently we've got a mentee program with Bali Productions, with Solar Slice from Feet Live, as well as the Laneway Festival. So we're delivering mentee programs. We just did in Gold Coast, two mentees there, two in Adelaide this weekend in Ghana, and then two in WA as well. So I'm the local production assistant here in Adelaide, and I'll also be kicking on over to Perth to go and run the mentor program over there. There's a lot more that's happening in 2026, but that is current.
Thanks, Leticia. Well, I think we are out of time, so thank you very much, everyone in the room. Can you just join me in giving a big hand to the panel, please?
Thanks also to a few other people who have joined online that haven't spoken as well. So Sally from Music Australia. Also Taylor McGregor from the Independent Music Venues Association in New Zealand across the ditch. Thanks, Howard, for chairing as well. And we will see you all very soon. Thanks to the venue as well, the Alta Bar, and to Music Taz. Thank you. See you later.